I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to In the Pink, the podcast with me, Natalie Pinkham. My next guest is a really interesting guy. In fact, he's both interesting and interested, and that's part of the reason he's done so well in life. His name is Alejandro Agab. Now, you might not know that name instantly, but if I tell you that he is the guy behind Formula E, I'm sure you'll want to hear more. I first met him back in the F1 paddock about 8 years ago when he used to run a GP2 team. And now, as I say, he heads up Formula E, the electric car racing revolution that he co-created with none other than Mr. Jean Todt. Now, he talks to me very candidly about the future of F1, what he believes it to be, and where electric cars fit into that. Plus, he tells me all about a new extreme series he's about to launch. He has a background in politics, the youngest MEP in history, the age of just 28. But don't worry, unlike most politicians, he gives me straight answers. Very direct, in fact. I think you'll find this guy very interesting indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Alejandro Agab. So here we are in your rather plush offices here in Hammersmith, July 2019. And when we look back and consider where Formula E has come, I guess it's actually quite symbolic when you walk around these ever-expanding offices. It just shows how well Formula E is doing. Has the success of the series surprised you? Has it come sooner than you expected? What are your feelings?
Yeah, well, the offices were definitely not this plush when we started. They were probably the size of the kitchen that we have here now. I guess that's a good sign, but it has definitely surprised us, yes. And we are far, far, far beyond our best expectations. When we started, we really didn't know what to expect. And obviously many, many people, there was a big consensus that this wouldn't work and that Formula was going to be, you know, how to have a short life. And, you know, we were, of course, worried about that. When everybody tells you, oh, no, this is the wrong idea and so on, we were like, oops, maybe they're right. But, you know, luckily we decided to give it a try and we thought we were right. And, yeah, we were maybe lucky, or also the times really changed in our favor. The whole kind of environment around us changed in our favor. And we probably were in the right place at the right time. So, yeah, it's a question where luck played a big role, obviously, and timing, which is always very important. And then we got kind of this momentum, and then the thing started growing and growing and growing, and now, yeah, and now we still keep growing a lot. I mean, we have the last race of season 5 in 1 week in New York, and I mean, the number of meetings of companies and potential teams, I mean, we cannot have more teams because we're full now, but a number of people want to get involved in one way or the other is huge. I mean, it's just difficult to find space for all these meetings. So yeah, I guess it's a good sign. We, you know, touch wood.
So when you say we, are we talking you and Jean Todt? How did it start? Was it your brainchild or his? I hear a little story about a Parisian dinner.
Yeah. It was probably both. I mean, he came
Come
up
on, it's never both. It's one person. Someone took the idea to somebody else.
So he asked me to have dinner with this other guy.
Okay.
Who was a former... I used to be in politics many, many years ago. So when I was in politics, I was sitting next to this... In parliament, we were sitting next to each other. I was sitting next to this Italian politician. His name is Antonio Tajani. And this guy was, at the time when Jean Todt got elected president of the FIA, he was the commissioner for industry of the European Commission. And within industry, within his portfolio, he had the motor industry, the car industry. So Jean said, you know Antonio? I said, yeah, I know him very well. Oh, it'd be interesting to meet with him just to have a chat. And I said, well, I'll set up a dinner in Paris. So I spoke to Antonio and he said, yeah, cool. I'd love to meet Jean Todt. Let's have dinner. So the three of us had dinner in this small restaurant in Paris in Estressam. And we started just talking in general about where the industry was going and what was Antonio's opinion and so on. And Antonio kept saying electric, 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 and all these new rules are going to be, you know, implemented about lowering CO2 emissions, and the industry is really going to have to go electric. Is very important. And Jean said the FIA should have an electric car championship. And then I said, yeah, and I would want to do it. I'd like to be the promoter of that. So if we have to give the credit to someone to have the idea, it would be Jean, because he's the first one who said we should have an electric car championship. Then a few months went by, and FIA did a tender, and I came up with a project. And I think the key for us to get and then we were a group, I had an investor with me and so on, but the key for us to get the license from the FIA was that we proposed a real racing product that could be feasible. And I think no one else really of the other bidders was coming from the racing world, and they didn't really know. They were saying, we would like to create an electric car championship, but they didn't know how to do it. We knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. We thought we knew how to do it. Then it was very difficult to do it, but at least we knew where to get chassis from, where to get batteries from, how to organize the races. And so we could get also a lot of talent from, you know, because we were coming from the world of motor racing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in GP2 and doing a lot of stuff with Formula One in the sponsorship and television and so on. We knew. So FIA at the end gave us the contract.
And why were you personally so excited by this? Was it because you were anticipating the revolution in electric cars? You wanted to be part of this huge process, which, well, you know, none of us could have anticipated how big, I guess. But did you have the foresight at that stage?
What I did see was that we were in trouble in Formula One. So my world of my business was in Formula One, around Formula One. I didn't own a Formula One team, but I was doing a lot of business with sponsors around Formula One. I did business with television rights in Formula One, and I did also business with... I had my own team in GP2 that was bringing drivers to Formula One. So my main source of income was around Formula One. And I started to see that if Formula One didn't become green, it would be in trouble in the future, because the world is going in one direction and you're going on a different direction, and that never works. You have to be on the same direction where things are going, and even better if you get yourself ahead of where things are going. And I saw about 10 years ago that the whole world was going to become a lot more concerned about the environment, because the problem is becoming bigger and bigger and people are actually being more and more aware. So I thought we should create a green Formula One. That is, or at least we should make Formula One green, or if we cannot, and sadly, it's really difficult to change things quickly in Formula One, we have to create a new one. And that's where the big opportunity for the business is going to be. I mean, I would love to say I did this because I am to the core environmentalist, but I am an environmentalist, but I didn't do it for that. I did it because I thought it was the best way to position a business for the future. And yeah, it kind of happened. So, yeah.
And was it ever considered a possibility where it could be a support series for Formula One? I mean, why don't we do this on the same weekend or at least a week before, like some sort of...
You know, when this was born, Bernie was at Formula One. And probably that was the luck for me, because Bernie didn't really think that this was a strong enough option. I remember he called it milk float competition, no, at the time. Without any, Bernie, I have greatest admiration, and we are friends for 20 years. But, you know, he just didn't believe in this. So we could create something separate. And I think it makes sense to keep it separate for a while and make it grow. And because we would not be able to grow if we were a support racer of Formula One. Formula One would always be kind of like controlling us. And having said that, I think in the future there could be space for cooperation, but more on... I'm not going to say on an equal level, but, you know, more on a way that we will, I don't know, make a kind of plan of our architecture for the whole future of the sport. Mm. because I think Formula One is going to go electric eventually. Has to go electric. The only question is when, and we have this license with the FIA. I mean, it would be much better if we kind of build the whole architecture together. Having said that, again, we have different shareholders, different owners, and they have different agendas. So
you have the same parent company there, don't you?
Yeah, we have, but the same person, actually, not even a parent company, but the same person on top is Joe Malone, is a shareholder of all my shareholders, and also the shareholder of the Formula One shareholder. But that doesn't mean he directs the companies below. They are independent. They're listed independently. They are actually supposed to act completely independently and for the best interest of their shareholders, which are many thousands of shareholders because they're public companies. So they act independently. And and for the moment, the guideline or the direction that we have is to just be independent, not to compete or not compete, because I don't think Formula is a competition to Formula One, but to go on our separate ways.
So what is Formula E? Because it feels like an opportunity for manufacturers to showcase their technology, develop that technology, move around the world, be part of this revolution. Would that be fair? And is racing almost, I mean, not a sideshow, but it's a bonus, perhaps, rather than the core of the business?
So I would put it probably the other way, but racing, it's only one part of what Formula E is. And probably in Formula One, racing is a lot more of what Formula One is. Mm. But racing is not all what Formula One is. Formula One is other things. Formula One is the glamour and the show business and the, you know, kind of dream and many other things, and the racing. But the racing maybe is 80% of Formula One.
Racing's at the core.
Racing is at the core of Formula E also.
Okay.
But racing is maybe 80 or 90% of Formula One. Mm-hmm. Racing is maybe 60% of Formula E. Mm-hmm. It's still a lot. If there was no race, there would be no Formula E. Mm. But the marketing value of Formula E proportionally is bigger. So marketing value is probably 40% of Formula E. The marketing value of Formula One, it's very big, but smaller compared to the importance of the race. So many of the manufacturers now need the marketing value. And I get a lot of them coming and saying, keep focusing on the marketing aspect of Formula E. Keep making this platform a marketing platform where we can showcase our technology. And because the challenge these manufacturers now have is to sell electric cars. Still, electric cars are not massively adopted by the general public. So they need marketing. Mm. They need to convince the people to buy those cars. And that's a role that Formula E can play. And that's why they're all here. That's why all the manufacturers are here. They are not here because they want to win the fastest race in the world. Sadly, many manufacturers don't care about the fastest race in the world. They care about selling their cars. And before, they could do that with Formula One. Now they can do that, or they can use the platform to do that with Formula E.
Because am I right in thinking that for the first time you're going to have Mercedes, Porsche, BMW and Audi all competing as manufacturers? That's never happened before, has it?
No.
I mean, that in itself is exciting and a huge achievement.
It is very exciting. And the four big Germans never raced against each other on one championship. The maximum was three of them. That's great, but I think that it's not to our credit. It's because the world is going on that direction. You know, it's not that we have created a championship that is completely irresistible. No, it's that we are the electric car championship there. Mm. And these brands are doing huge investment in the electric manufacturing capability they have in their factories. They're changing them. They're preparing themselves. They're announcing 25 different cars coming electric in the next 5 years. So that's a championship for them. So and we have to keep it like that. And also, I think we learn a lot of lessons from the time when we were in Formula One about how to keep the cost under control. Mm. So there are two ways to get a huge return on your investment. You make a big investment and you get a massive return on spectators and on everything. Or you make a reasonable investment, not so big, and you still get a decent viewership and so on. And at the end, the return on investment is the same. So we have to keep the cost low. And we have a few different lessons that we learned from when we were in Formula One that we are putting into practice here, and they work.
So how do you think things are going to go? Because it feels as if we are making a play in Formula One to be more relevant and to be more environmentally friendly, you know, changing the engines. But that has been at the cost of noise, and it's upset the purists and the real racing fans. Is there an argument to say, keep it old school, keep it as just a purely entertainment format that is has got no relevance to everyday lives, and then use Formula E to be what takes us forward into the future?
Well, there is definitely a point for that. I think what should have happened is that Formula One should have owned Formula E from the beginning, like the MotoGP has done with MotoE. But they didn't.
And that was Bernie's choice, was it?
Yeah. I mean, not even his choice. I don't think he even considered it.
Right.
I don't even think he thought about it.
Do you think if it had happened now with the current owners, they would have said?
He said it the other day. He said, if I had to put my money somewhere now, I would put it in Formula E. So, yeah.
Bernie said that.
Yeah.
But with the current owners, do you think it would have been a different story?
Oh, definitely.
As well?
Yeah. Oh, the current owners would have. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
That's a shame then, isn't it? Surely that can change.
Well, it's not a shame for me. But but
no, but what I mean is that, a collaborative approach may be better longer term, but maybe you'll be running the whole lot.
Well, I don't know about that, but definitely it would have been different probably if the current owners would have been there at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The question of should Formula One stay on the, you know, V8s or V10s and really push for it, I think going to this more sustainable hybrid system hasn't made a difference. I think it would have been better to stay on the V8s or definitely stay on the V8s.
Well, on an environmental level, it's just symbolic.
It hasn't made a difference. It would have made a difference if Formula E didn't exist.
Right.
But as Formula E exists, we already take it all because we are greener. Because it doesn't matter if you're hybrid, if you have a full electric thing next to you. You can try to go, but then someone will always say, yeah, but you're not the full product because the full product is that one. Yeah. So then all the benefit you can get from saying I'm greener kind of disappears. So people really don't care.
It's sort of paying lip service in a way.
It doesn't really make a difference, but it does make a difference to all those people, me included, who loved the V8 noise and the V8 performance. So
you're not keeping anyone happy.
You're not, and also the V8 cost, because these engines now are incredibly expensive. Of course, some manufacturers will say, "Yeah, but we want to be this hybrid thing," or you know, this is not relevant or whatnot. But that's not true. They say that because they master the technology now and they want to keep the advantage. They don't say it because they really believe in this hybrid thing. If they were mastering or the best on the V8 technology, they would say we have to keep the V8 technology, because teams always and very legitimately only act on their own interest. So it really doesn't make a difference.
Okay, so what's the answer? He pauses to take a drink, buying him some time to think.
I would definitely go back to V8s if I was from Formula One. Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be considered a step backwards?
Yeah. Sometimes you have to accept you've made a mistake and just, you know, they said beat the bullet.
Yeah, bite the bullet.
Bite the bullet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that would be very popular in some quarters. But do you feel, I mean, you're still a big F1 fan.
Big.
And it's still exciting, and certainly last time out in Austria, we've seen
great
that
race.
It was, I mean, a fantastic race. So it's still the pinnacle of motorsport to an extent. I know that...
I think Formula One will always be the pinnacle of motorsport.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for me, the key is the history. History is incredibly important for motorsport. And many people who love motorsport, me included, we love motorsport because everything that it represents from 1950, even from Grand Prix racing before Formula One. But if you look at Formula One, whoever wins Formula One is the successor of Fangio, is the successor of Schumacher, is the successor of Senna, is the successor of Fittipaldi, of Prost, of Hamilton. Hamilton is probably the successor of himself for a little bit still. That's greatness. That you cannot have in any other motorsport. You can do whatever you want. You can create anything you want, but you will never have that chain. So Formula One will always be the pinnacle of motorsport. But I think Formula One will become electric. It's just the way it will be.
Yeah, but you've just said it should go back to V8s, and I was saying it will go electric.
So go for the short term until it becomes electric. Yeah.
But how do you manage that?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's not me to manage it for the moment. I mean,
so you just some people have suggested that you would be good at the helm of running Formula One. Is it something that you've considered? Is that something? Are you going to give me a politician's answer?
No, I'm not. I'm going to give you the real answer. Of course, I would love to do that job, but I can't. And I can't, not for any specific reason, not because my wife doesn't let me, or because I can't because of my contract. So my shareholders, when they came in and they invested in this company and so on, they put as a condition that I have a non-compete. And my non-compete is with Formula One. Mm-hmm. So I cannot do Formula One.
So it is seen as direct competition, which is interesting. Again, goes back to what we were talking about before.
My shareholders just didn't want me to.
Sure. I'd be
to have that option. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying I've been offered the job. I have not been offered the job also. So it's not I have not been offered the job. But even if I was offered the job, I could not take it because of my contract.
So you have now, you're in the process of leaving your role as CEO of Formula E to mm-hmm. become chairman. And you're going across to do an Extreme. Okay, tell us about that.
So Extreme is the new project we have. And it's very exciting. I'm really excited about it. And I think I've done already my job in Formula E, in a way, because, you know, my last race as CEO will be New York. So I will have done 5 full seasons. When we started Formula E, we didn't even know if we were going to last one season. Mm. So 5 full seasons. And I think I leave my job as CEO. I'm not leaving Formula E. I'm staying as chairman, and I will have a lot of work as chairman. But as CEO and managing the day-to-day, I think I leave Formula E at its best moment. Mm. Is when it's growing at its strongest pace. We have lots of great sponsors. We have a great financial strength in the company. We have new teams coming next year, Mercedes and Porsche in, great drivers. I mean, you know, the fantastic cities. We have a big pipeline of cities that want to come in. So it's great to leave when things are on a good way, no?
I'm right in thinking that actually it was touch and go a few times. It could have gone under, particularly in the first season.
We were almost under. We were really, really bad in the first season. After 3 races, we'd run out of money. And we spent a month like zombies trying to survive. And by, you know, last minute, like these things happen, we got investment in and we basically saved the company. And since then, it has been great. But it was really, really, we went really close to the wire. But, you know, it happens with many startups. So, you know, you learn and it was an experience that, you know, it was horrible. But now you remember it and you're like, thank God it happened. I would wake up every morning, 3 a.m. I would wake up and just see invoices and wherever, which one I'm going to pay, which one I'm going to convince to wait and stuff like that. But it was very close. But now it's great. So I'm stopping as CEO. We'll transition to chairman. And then I will start. I have started already this new project called Extreme E, which is basically a kind of evolution of the Dakar, the rallies, the off-road, and all that. And again, it creates a platform for teams and OEMs just to, well, first of all, have fun, because it's going to be an incredible, super fun race. It's going to be a race, a real race, a real competition, but also to showcase especially SUVs, which is a category that's going to grow a lot, on the most extreme conditions. So you can show that electric cars work well in the ice, in the rocks, in the mountains, in the deserts, wherever. And also you go to these places which are kind of challenged by climate change and you showcase what's going on. I mean, we have this place in the Arctic, for example, that we're going to race on these rocks and this sand that before used to be under the ice sheet. And now there's no ice sheet. And then you see the ice sheet behind the race. So you see all this huge wall of ice. It will look like Game of Thrones, you know, the wall, the ice wall that separates the north from the, where all these crazy, how they call them? Dead, well, the dead live.
Yeah.
That's going to be where we're going to race, basically. That's going to be one of the visuals. The other one is in the Himalayas. You have to go one of these roads that is only open in May and June or something because it's frozen and snowed in the rest of the time, into this valley, and you're surrounded by all the peaks of the Himalayas, and you're in a valley that used to be a glacier, and now it's only rocks. So you showcase all these things that are going on, which many people don't know about. Yeah. And because many people don't, you know, some people like to watch documentaries, but a lot of people like to watch races. More people like to watch races than watch documentaries. So we almost introduce the message into the race.
Yeah. So now you get both.
Now you get both in one. Exactly. Okay. So that's
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Plan, yeah.
So when does this get up and running? When will we see this? And where will we see it?
So we already unveiled the ship. We have a ship that is going to go around the world with all these cars. There's going to be a floating paddock because, of course, you cannot go to the Arctic or to up the Amazon or something and find hotels or anything. So we have everything on a ship. And then we presented the car in Goodwood last Friday, and it's great. I hadn't seen the car before that. It's huge, and it's so cool, the car. So that's going to be the base car. Then the manufacturers can do their own bodywork and motors and so on. And then first race is about 18 months away. So everything is, 18 months sounds far, but it's not. So everything is in preparation. The batteries are being made and designed by Williams. The cars, the chassis are there. We're testing the car. I mean, everything is, like we did with Formula E, everything is in motion with this. So we're looking for the locations. First race should be around February. We haven't found the location for the first race yet. I want it to be linked to plastic pollution. So it should be in some kind of coast, some kind of area or an island that has a lot of plastic on it. Now plastic pollution is a huge problem, and we want to showcase that in a race. And then probably we'll go to Himalayas, then we'll race in a desert, then we'll race. We have this incredible location in the forest in the Amazon where the forest has all been cut, and so there's no more forest. But the forest is just behind you. So you race there and you see the forest in the end, but then you show all these logs in the floor and, you know, the ground. So
really powerful images there.
Yeah.
You know, pushing a very strong message.
Yeah, exactly. Very powerful images, but at the same time, a really cool race. Mm-hmm. And the format is one against one. So you won't have the 12 cars racing at the same time. You always have two cars or three cars. Maybe it's a kind of rallycross concept. And then you have kind of tennis concept or football, like quarterfinals, semifinals, and the final. And the semifinals and finals are live on TV. So, yeah, so that's the concept.
And you done the TV deal yet?
We have a few TV deals in the oven. We announced one, so we have Fox in the US, like Formula E. Yeah. Many of the Formula E broadcasters are really keen also on this. Mm. And some others, which are not Formula E broadcasters, that we've been surprised, really big broadcasters were very keen. So yeah, we will do a TV deal with everyone.
How important is the fact that racing is in your DNA to the fact that you can just push forward with these massive projects? Because it gives you automatic credibility with all the people you're dealing with, but also the passion, the desire to keep moving forward. And those 3 a.m. wake-up calls hopefully aren't always about invoices. They're about ideas as well.
Well, I for me, it's the key to be racing. I mean, I consider myself a racing man. I've been in the world of racing, I don't know, for 20 years now. And I always say this could have been created by an environmentalist or by a racing man. It was created by a racing man, Formula E, and I think the same with Extreme. And I think otherwise this project would not be the same. These are races. These are racing. And the people I talk to create Extreme E now are, I don't know, Carlos Sainz or my drivers in Formula E, or, you know, I get advice from these people. I don't get advice from, you know, I mean, I actually do get advice too from scientists and people from climate change, but this is a race. And then, of course, you bring in, like I say, you use the race to spread the science message, which is really important.
And what about your background in politics? Because you say you've been racing for a long time. But an MEP at 28, is that right?
Yeah, at the time I was the youngest MEP, in the European Parliament. It was a lot of fun. It was great. And it also gave me a great experience because politics is in everything. And especially in motor racing, there is so much politics. And having that background in politics maybe allows you to kind of move a little bit better on those kind of political discussions.
And you married into a formidable family on the politics front as well. Yes. So father-in-law, former Prime Minister of Spain, and mother-in-law, former Mayor of Madrid. I mean, it's quite intimidating, isn't it?
Yeah, my father-in-law, I was my boss at the time. So,
oh my God, you married your boss's daughter.
I did. That's why I resigned. I didn't want my father-in-law to be my boss or my boss to be my father-in-law.
That's a good point.
So that's why I'm in motorsport, because otherwise I would have probably continued my political career. But when I married my wife, I decided to stop politics and look for something else. And I was friends with Flavio Briatore and with Bernie from before. And they said, let's do stuff together in racing. And that's how it started.
I can't imagine how interesting or animated your Sunday lunches must be at home. Do you all talk about politics, or do you leave it at the door? Because we have a bit of a rule at home. You can't talk about religion or politics, otherwise an argument breaks out.
We talk a lot about politics, but it's because my kids love politics. So I have four boys, and especially they all love it. But the oldest is 15 now. He's really into politics. The 13-year-old also are into politics. And so we talk a lot about politics, but we are all kind of pretty like-minded, so the discussions are all mostly against people that are not around the table.
That's healthy, good. Do they love politics because they want to change the world? Are they looking at their dad as doing pretty cool things out there and making a difference? Why are they so into it? Because it's pretty young to be as interested as they are.
I think they love politics more because of his grandfather, because they don't see me at all as a politician. They've never seen me as a politician. So they kind of know that I was in politics eventually, but they never see me as a politician. They see me as a businessman, my kids. Some want to be businessmen, but some, mainly the others, has a very close relationship with his grandfather, the one that was prime minister.
Yeah.
So that's where they get the kind of admiration for politics. And they want to change the world. Of course, everyone, when they're 15, they want to change the world. I'm 48, I still want to change the world. So
what do you want your legacy to be? That you have made a difference with climate change? You've changed the landscape of racing. What is that?
I mean, of course, you have to be kind of modest and,
cautious. You can have ambition and you can, dreams.
I mean, if I could say that my legacy is that I made a contribution that there are more electric cars in the world, that would be great, because that's a good legacy. And then that has a kind of knock-on effect on CO2 emissions, even better, or less city pollution, even better. So that's kind of, I would love to have that legacy,
So, The Extreme Series that you're launching now, is that just another stepping stone in that direction? Are there going to be more of the same?
Yep.
At what point will you say, okay, I've done my bit now, I've made a difference, I can exit this?
Well, the thing is, because I have so much fun doing it, and I'm actually doing well with it, I'm not really thinking of stopping anytime soon. But it is another step in the same direction. So Extreme has exactly the same ultimate purpose as Formula E, which is to promote electric cars. And that's a good thing. And if you go around the office here in Formula E, everyone really feels so motivated because of that, because they think they're working for some kind of purpose. And I think now business and doing any company or building any company, it's a lot easier when you have a purpose behind, a good purpose behind, because now people are not, their only goal is not just to make money. People want to have something else. People want to have something that means something positive. And if you work for a company where, of course, you make a salary or you make a good living or something, but on top of it, you have a good purpose in that company, people work a lot happier.
Yeah, because you mentioned the word fun there, and that is something that, from the outside looking in, I definitely associate with Formula E. You seem to have these great parties, actually talking to a lot of the drivers that have gone from Formula One to Formula E. They say, the parties are insane. I guess it's the kind of Red Bull effect, isn't it, of bringing a shot in the arm for the sport, but also still being taken seriously enough to know that racing is at the essence of this. Do you think that there's ever a risk, particularly with things like fan boost and attack mode, that it can be seen as a bit gimmicky? Or do you think that it's important to make it feel more inclusive and more accessible, more relevant, better for gamers, that kind of thing?
I think we have a something obviously good and bad. I would love to have the history of Formula One and the tradition and so on, and I don't have it, which is bad. I would love to have it in Formula E, but we are free to do anything because we're so young and so new. We can introduce those kind of things, which are gimmicks, but we can afford to be gimmicky because that's in our DNA. That's Formula E. Formula E is new, it's electric, it's different, it's in the city, it's kind of disruptive. So it doesn't matter that much if we do this fan boosting or if we do the attack mode, which actually is really working great for the races. I wouldn't be surprised if other racing categories take attack mode because it has a direct link with technology also and makes racing very interesting. But if we were Formula One, probably we could not do all these things because then it would be going one step too far.
Yeah, but it's interesting you say that because actually I think it's a kind of trial process a bit with all these things, isn't it? Because when they said they were going to give the extra point for fastest lap, I was like, nah, that's stupid. But look how it's played out. It's actually worked really well and everybody pushes. Yeah, okay. Well done. Plagiarism's best form of flattery.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
No. The thing is, once they've been tested in Formula E, these things then can be adopted in Formula One, for example. But I think Formula E has the luxury to be able to be kind of a test ground for any kind of crazy idea. And we've made that on purpose.
And also, you don't necessarily have such a judgmental audience that you're always trying to please. And someone's always moaning in
that's
F1
why, that's why because of the legacy. Those things. Yeah. Exactly. We don't have this audience that is out there and that gets really offended if there is something that changes something. And then also, we love to party. So the whole team here likes it very much. I like it very much. And I think that's really part of Formula E. The kind of fun atmosphere and relaxed atmosphere and inclusive atmosphere and all that. And parties have been a big part of it, yeah.
Yeah, because you always seem to have big faces at the races, and that is clearly a ploy to get you on the front pages, not just the back of the newspapers. And it works, it gets it talked about. But does it in any way kind of trivialise it a little bit, do you think?
No, I think glamour and show business and so on are really a very important part of the entertainment side of it and the marketing side of it. And like I say, we are not afraid of this trivialization or anything like that, because when you have a real race going on, all this falls away, you know. If you don't have a real race going on, then you have to really worry about, you know, those things. But we have a great race going on. You know, 8 different winners, I don't know how many winners in this season. For races, very competitive races. So, then we're fine.
And you touched on it before, just about F1 being the pinnacle in terms of racing and the best drivers in the world. That some argue that, well, you know, Formula E is like the retirement plan for Formula One drivers. It's where you go if you can't get into F1. But actually, you could look at someone like Alex Albon this year, who could easily have been racing in Formula E and is actually really punching above his weight already in Formula One. So do you think, I mean, how would you rate the sort of standard of driving talent across the two series?
I think about maybe 6 or 8 of the Formula One drivers are the best in the world. And then the rest and the Formula E drivers are next. So I would say every driver gets paid in Formula E. That's not the case in Formula One. But the top 8 drivers in Formula One are probably the best in the world. So those 8 drivers, of the 40 drivers between Formula E and Formula One, are the top 8. The rest is equal.
And they're interchangeable almost.
And they're fully interchangeable. If 15 of the Formula E drivers had budget, those 15 could be in Formula One. It's just a question of budget. But the top 8 in Formula One are probably the best drivers in the world. And it is what it is. I mean, you cannot, confront reality. Having said that, we have a great, 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 lineup of drivers. And I love it when an experienced driver from Formula One comes to Formula E, like Felipe, for example. And then we have other young guys that come. You know, Felix Rosenquist came to Formula E, and then now it's in Indy with Ganassi, with one of the top teams. So, you know, we have incredible talent in Formula E.
One question that I ask all my guests is, What keeps you awake at night? Now, back in 2011, that was invoices. But what about now? Is it ideas? Is it pressure?
No, nothing keeps me awake at night, I must say. No, nothing. I sleep really well, and nothing keeps me awake at night. I mean, you know, maybe when my kids go out now, if they're late or something, that keeps me a little bit awake at night. But now, also, they don't drive, which is good. No one drives now.
I mean, that's crazy in itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I look at my kids who are 3 and 4, and they probably will never take a driving test. Oh, that's bonkers.
Most likely not. My kids are not stressed at all about taking... I mean, the oldest is 15, he's not driving yet, but, you know, he has Uber, and he just... And as a parent, you feel a lot better, because my parents were very scared of road accidents. They were not scared that I would, like, bang my head on the stairs of a nightclub. They would scare that I would be drunk and driving back home and crash my car and, you know, have a very serious accident. That is not in the equation anymore.
How is my daughter going to be the first Formula One world champion female if she doesn't get a driving license?
That's very interesting. I think because no one else will, she will do karting and she will be the best of all the people that don't drive.
And if you've retired from all of this, will you manage her?
Yeah, for sure. If it's your daughter, 100%.
Done. Alejandro, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to talk.
Very welcome. Good to see you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.